Let's talk on the street, it sounds so familiar. Great expectations, everybody's watching you.
This is RebelNet Radio with your host T.E. Parker and Joe Spilotro.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to RebelNet Radio, edition 71. Joe, we're getting old.
Yeah, considering we pumped out about 50 of them that first year.
Well, that's true. So maybe we're just midlife crisis it right now.
I'm midlife. You're nowhere close.
Welcome, everybody. Little bit of a celebration this week. Little bit of feeling. Just the way everything's gone down in the last, almost since the Dave Rice dismissal, but definitely played out over the last few weeks of just the challenges with this basketball program in this town and everything that has to go through with it. But we have a coach. Chris Beard is officially...
Bird?
Excuse me, Chris Bird.
Oh, Beard.
Yeah. Yeah, after you go through that Regents 2.5 meeting and then 2.5 hour meeting, and then you come and your president calls you the wrong name, you know you're getting off on the right start, Joe.
Oh yeah, very much so. That had to be like, it had to feel like an inquisition to him.
He's bound for success.
He's coming here to get a happy day, sign off, be done. You're the new coach. You're introduced, and it ended up being an ordeal.
There wasn't a ton of negative from the public perspective that came out at that Regents meeting about Coach Bird, but excuse me, Coach Beard.
Don't start doing this.
Jessup,
don't start
Jessup
doing
screwed
this.
Me forever now. I didn't make that mistake until that happened.
Ola Kiabi. It's going to be Bird for as long as...
That's it. That's done.
Get rid of it.
I'm over it.
If you keep saying Bird, he's not going to answer your 21 questions.
I know. He's going to look at me like, dude, you're the guy.
Right. Yeah.
You're the idiot.
Yeah.
Where was I going with that?
I don't know. We're already lost 2 minutes and 50 seconds in.
Oh, well, here we go.
All right.
So, So you get that start, and he's got a long road to hoe, but... We'll see. I mean, he said all the right things at the press conference on Friday. Mm-hmm. And we know that now that he's actually officially the UNLV coach, he's going to be doing a whole lot of recruiting.
Yes.
That's a foregone conclusion.
Yes.
Because as we've seen, we were full of an 8-9 man rotation last year of NBA guys.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's why you declare.
You know? It's silly that we thought 18 wins over the last 2 years with these guys was crazy, considering 2 years ago we had a lottery pick and a guy that went pro and got some time in the NBA. And then this year we have 7 guys that are going to be tossing their name in the lottery. And how many picks are there? About 58, and we have 7 guys.
So, and one will get drafted.
So more than 10% think they're one of the best players in the world to not playing in the NBA. What do you think about that?
I don't even want to get into it. Steven, I get. That makes sense to me. The rest of them don't. But, you know, it's one of these things that it's obviously on the site. We argue about it left and right and whether people should or shouldn't. In the end... This is the way I look at it. They don't tell me how to spend my money. They don't tell me what to name my kids. They're not paying my bills. We shouldn't be telling them what to do. Obviously, we see it from our angle, whether they're ready or not, or whether they'll be ready in the future. Because the NBA doesn't draft on whether you're ready or not right now. Not anymore. It's not like that anymore. They're drafting on potential. So, yeah, a lot of fans won't see it, but, you know, it's these kids' lives. They're making the decision. They're going to have to live with it for better or worse. We can't tell them what to do and what not to do. I just wish the best to all of them. And, you know, you hope they do make it. If not, they could play overseas and make some money that way, and they could always come back for their degree or whatever. But, you know, what else can you do, really?
In terms of...
Yeah, I mean, but what do you...
From whose perspective? The kid's perspective or the program's
fans,
perspective?
What are you supposed to do? You just have to wish him luck and move on and fill the spots and hope everything goes okay.
Yeah.
I mean, well...
And then don't recruit players like that anymore.
Well, I understand, and I get that. Rice recruited kids with NBA ambitions. Unfortunately, too many of them had ambitions.
That was all their ambition.
Yeah. Too many of them, their ambition, they weren't patient enough. That's at least my feeling. They weren't patient enough to let it play out. I mean, I thought when I first saw, for example, Pat McCaw play as a freshman over the summer before, we knew who he was. We figured initially when he was recruited and signed, we thought he was like a late throw-in and just sort of an insurance policy.
A four-year guy.
But watching him play that first year, you're like, this kid is going to be really good. After 4 years at UNLV, he's going to have a really good shot at the NBA. Well, he just finished his second year, and he's off. Will he make it? Will he not? You know, I don't know. I don't think so, but you don't know. I don't understand the whole signing with an agent other than, to me, that's more, for Steven, I understand it because of where he's projected. For the rest, if they sign with an agent, that's more of a, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm done with UNLV. I just don't want to deal with it anymore, so I'm taking off. That it's more of a statement of that. Same with the transfers.
Yeah, I mean, but even the guys that didn't sign with an agent this year, they're not coming back.
No, I certainly don't expect. Who did not sign
Derek
with an
Jones.
Agent? Derek
Jones.
Derek,
Obekpa.
Obekpa, I don't expect him back. I know a lot of fans are hopeful that, if he doesn't get drafted, he'll be back at UNLV. I personally don't expect it. Derek, I think, is one that would. He seems like the type of player that would come back, but I just don't know with that ACT.
Yeah, he's got other issues.
Yeah, there's other issues. I don't,
the coaching turnover to not
it's sad
think
because
about college.
I think Obekpa would have been the type of player that would have done real well under Beard.
Yeah, he would have thrived.
I really think so. It seems like his type of player, but for whatever reason, he's just done.
Probably the reason being that he envisioned himself playing under
I think so.
And that style, and now he's got a completely different aspect. I mean, let's be honest, he went and played for Steve Lavin, who's a players guy, and then Dave Rice, who's a players guy.
Right.
And now he's got more of a team-focused, centric head coach and probably doesn't care nearly as much about your individual skill level.
Which you think would fit right up his alley, since offensively he's really raw, defensively he's good, very good.
Right. Oh, well, we can see that.
I have a feeling it's just the whole tornado here that's happened at UNLV for a lot of the guys has just been enough is enough, and it's nothing against Beard himself necessarily. It's just the state of things at UNLV, and they've just had enough, and they either want a fresh start or they just want to move on.
Yeah, what's interesting is we had three NBA centers on our roster last year, huh?
Well,
Zimmerman, good luck. And,
Chris
Obekpa.
The good luck thing that I read today on Twitter, I don't know what to say.
Yeah, it was pretty shocking. In case you didn't see it, folks, good luck came out and kind of had a little essay written about trying to clear things up about why he left UNLV, and it wasn't over disappointment or anger. It was more about he felt that in order for him to be able to reach the next level, he needed to step away from the UNLV program and really focus individually to prepare himself for this upcoming draft. And, it's totally a mindset of young people that just really are good people, but just don't have any clue. I mean, he would struggle to make an MBDL team.
Absolutely. But you know what? I'm thinking about it now. I'm going to put my name in the draft.
For sure.
Why not?
You get as much of a shot.
Exactly.
You know? And your potential's off the charts.
I'm coachable.
Yes, you are. You play hard.
For that kind of contract in the NBA, I will do whatever the coach asks.
Hey, I would wipe the sweat off a guy laying on the floor.
Kenny. but, yeah, it's a lot of it has to do with I'm sure Rice sold the NBA dream to all these kids. And it's a good way to get these kids in here, but it probably wasn't the best way to keep them focused because they were constantly focused on the NBA, a lot of them. And it backfired in a lot of instances. It really did, and it gave UNLV zero continuity. You look at the teams that had success this year. You look at the ultimate success with Villanova, and it was all four-year guys.
Mm-hmm. Throw in a couple young guys like the Brunson kid. And,
right.
But Brunson comes from a family where his dad made it to the NBA as a hardworking role player.
Right.
You know, and his dad was the third best player on his college team with Eddie Jones and Aaron McKee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he kind of, I'm sure, set the tone of, because that's the type of player he was, you got to work hard to make the NBA. And it's similar to, like, Del Curry. I'm sure when he was raising Steph, he talked about hard work and you got to keep working to improve, to be better, to, you know, and the Brunson thing's the same type of deal, I would have to imagine. I think it was a good sign. Actually, it's funny, over the last couple of years, we've seen teams in the NBA and college win championships. Now, Duke won 2 years ago with a bunch of freshman talented players, but the last four, Golden State, San Antonio, Duke, and Villanova to win, very team-oriented and very focused on the main goal of winning.
Yeah, you've seen a definite shift in that. Less, I don't want to say individual ability, but just it's more sharing the ball movement, getting quality shots just by player movement and ball movement. It's very definitely unselfish based.
Well, and if you watch San Antonio and Golden State play, which I don't a ton, but
they played tonight.
Yeah, they did. They played against each other tonight. But both teams play the game the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so much head and shoulders above every other team in the NBA. It's ridiculous because of that very reason. And also because they got a culture. Mm-hmm. And there was one question I was going to ask Coach Beard the other day, but I held off because I wanted to kind of save that one for myself at a time individually rather than in a public setting. And that was talking about how well Coach Rice recruited here and no shortage of talent. But the fact was, over the 5 years, there was never a program built. And kind of how he was going to focus on getting a program in place rather than just a AAU factory is what we turned out to be during those 5 years, in my opinion. Here's the real deal. You look at what was in place when Bryce got here. Every player stayed.
Mm-hmm.
You look at what's in place now, three players are staying. Two of them, one's coming off a serious injury.
Mm-hmm. Ben.
Okay. One should maybe not even be on the team.
Who's that?
Green Billet.
Oh.
And then Poyser. And I wouldn't be shocked if Poyser left.
I don't know. I haven't heard anything
about
that.
No idea.
But... you know, but I again, a lot of that is when.
But look at the differences between where the program was with the type of players,
understood,
then and to now. I mean,
let me ask you this. Let me ask you this: what impact do you think that January 10th firing had to do with that?
But it was the whole time he was here, and I'm not trying to
say
anything bad about Coach Rice.
No, I understand.
He made a decision to go that path.
But you don't think that the chance for retainment of any of these players plays out a little bit better when a head coach gets to finish the year and there's not all this extraneous BS that hits the media for the 2 months when we had an interim in Todd Simon, it was just so unnatural.
Okay.
There's a reason that they don't have...
The only players that left that would have probably stayed if Rice was still here is Dwayne Morgan and Jordan Cornish. And Obekpa.
Okay.
Good Luck was gone. Steven was gone.
Right.
Pat was probably going to be gone.
Well, we don't know about Pat.
We don't.
That's an assumption.
But we've talked many times that Pat's his own guy, and yeah, he was definitely leaning on maybe not being here.
I think the
Derek Jones was going to be there. He probably not going to be here.
By way of him wanting to leave?
No, by test scores and that type of thing. And he was getting some NBA buzz.
He was getting some NBA buzz, but that's where I think it's wrong. I think if you finish out the season, a coach finishes out a season, you got a chance at retainment. You absolutely, because it's more of a natural process. Even if the coach gets fired at the end of the year, at least it's a more natural death. I mean, you played out the season, you stayed together. Now UNLV, they can find themselves in a whole host of problems now that it comes down to APR too. Okay. Rice, you know as well as I do, he stayed on top of APR. In fact, UNLV's APR was very, very, very good. If I'm not mistaken,
yeah, it was
somewhere around 1,000.
Phenomenal.
But now you got players. Once that happened, now you got players. Things weren't monitored as closely as probably they should have been.
Mm-hmm.
And now GPAs drop.
Mm-hmm.
And now you start to take APR hits when they do transfer and if their GPA is too low. So what I'm saying is you lost a little bit there as well, and you may end up paying for that in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I think UNLV will be okay because the APR was in really good shape.
Right.
But what I'm saying is a lot of things changed after January 10th, and they may not have changed quite as much if it was done on, say, March 28th or whatever. I really believe that.
I can't.
That's why amid. But that's
I cannot say what would have happened if the firing came.
You
later.
Can't. But do you think it would have been?
But
as
I know
bad?
What did happen.
Oh, we know what did happen. Do you think it could have been any better, or it would have been any better? You already said Obekpa would have stayed.
Yeah, if Rice was still here, is what I'm saying.
Oh, but you're saying there would have been no chance for retainment at that point.
If Chris Beard comes in?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't think he's the guy that these guys signed up to play for.
So you think everybody's leaving because Beard is too tough?
Not necessarily. But okay. He doesn't say the same things that Rice said.
Oh, of course not. Of course not. It's going to be
it's a different vibe.
180. But what I'm saying is a mid-season, there's a reason mid-season firings do not happen.
Yeah,
because they're very
sends everything in disarray.
Everything's unpredictable. You don't have control of a situation anymore. There's a lot of talking. There's a lot of looking. There's a lot of poaching. There's a lot of everything that mm-hmm. goes on with a midseason firing. That is why Division I colleges do not do it unless it is based upon infractions or a DUI or getting caught with doing lines off a stripper.
Hey, now.
You know, I'm not talking about Colorado State's coach.
Or impregnating one of your players.
Yeah, things like that.
One of the worst stories I've heard. And for that kid to tarnish his mother's name while she's dying or can't defend her name
right.
with her dementia, that's just sad. So sad.
Anyway, I think the January 10th or 11th or whatever it was, firing, it really set UNLV up for a really... I don't think there was anything good that came out of it. Nothing. If UNLV was going to... If they knew they were going to fire Rice, you know you're going to fire Rice, and you put out feelers behind the scene, and you start doing your coaching search
mm-hmm.
behind the scene, sort of like Ben Howland was ready to take over last year. Right?
Right.
So what I'm saying is that whole process, it's moving behind the scenes without many people knowing about it.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it was a grave miscalculation by UNLV on how
the way the season played out. Absolutely, of course, it was. I'm not going to defend the reason why it was done because I don't believe it should have been done on January 10th. But I can definitely see from the perspective of what if he wins?
Well,
because the Mountain West isn't any good.
Okay, and that gets us to a whole different area. Then it's a real crappy reason to do it.
Right.
Well, there is, to me, there's no good reason unless it's an infraction.
Yeah, because guess what? If he wins, that's what all you wanted from him anyway.
Exactly.
I know.
I know. So that's...
But that's the only reason I can envision
That's the only thing that makes sense is UNLV, because that was before all the injuries. UNLV still has enough talent. They could do something in the Mountain West tournament. They weren't, you know,
the Mountain West, they only lost two or three games.
They lost three in a row. And as it turned out, what'd San Diego State lose? 2-3?
Right.
Yeah, you probably,
none to us, though.
Yeah, you probably weren't going to catch them regardless, even if you made a Boise State 2015 turnaround. Yeah, I think it was based on, you know, we can't risk this. We need to get rid of them. Let's find a good time to do it. And there's no better time to do it than after three straight losses.
The only other reason that it could have been done was the fans hate Rice. We got to get rid of him now for a feel-good moment of the season.
What feel-good did it give us?
Nothing.
Triple overtime win against Air Force and overtime, Pat's half-court shot against Reno. What I'm saying is there was nothing good immediately. Todd was completely handcuffed. In terms of, I mean...
You talk about a tough situation.
No, it's a can't-win situation.
Yeah.
You can't. So there was really no good that you could foresee coming out of it. There was going to be more than likely a dismissal at the end of the year. It should have played out that way. I don't know. I believe in the contracts. You make a contract, you keep a contract. You can make your decision after the year.
Especially because Rice was never going to embarrass the school.
Yeah, exactly. The school embarrassed themselves more than Rice did with anything off the court or anything. I mean, it was...
Right. Rice was going to work hard until the very last day that he was going here.
I think UNLV handled it about as wrong as possible. And I know some people disagree, but I'd be more willing to listen to that reasoning if I seen more Division I firings in the middle of the season, whether it be football or
basketball. Yeah, you just don't see it.
You don't see it. And there's a reason. You can't control a situation. And anybody can foresee that there's really nothing good that's going to come out of it mm-hmm. for the next couple months.
Plus, we had the assistant coaches.
The whole
kind
thing
of revolting against each other, and
it was a mess. It was a mess. It was
not much positive. A lot of headaches, and then we get to the off season, and we go for the coaching search, and what should have been. Hopefully under the radar and you go out and you get a guy and you get him done and you get him signed and you get him to a press conference and nothing works that easy here.
You know, it was almost a negative to have so much time to work behind the scenes because exactly. then you were expected
to hit a home run,
to be five steps ahead of everybody else who was looking for a coach when in reality that wasn't going to happen because season still had to play out, and you're in a holding pattern.
Yes,
until the prospective coach's team loses, and you're on equal footing with everybody else at that point.
Right.
So
whether we wanted the Stephen F. Austin coach or not, we can't talk to him until after a season's over.
Yeah, you could get some, intermediary talking.
Right.
But that's
about it. But he's not signing a contract midseason.
No. You saw as well as I do. I think UNLV made plenty of progress with Brad Underwood, but as soon as...
Took Oklahoma State one day.
Yeah, exactly.
It was done.
So, and it wasn't going to happen until his season ended.
Right.
So any of that progress ended up, in hindsight, just wasted motion, wasted time and energy.
Right. I'm sure there's a lot of people with a lot of money that spent a lot of hours on nothing.
As it turned out, yeah. During that time, they don't think so, and they're working as hard as they can.
Right, they're talking and reaching out.
And you know as well as I do, you know he was pretty exhaustive with...
All of the candidates that they wanted to bring here.
There are a lot that...
And their list was good. Yeah. I liked all the candidates that were the main contenders for this job.
Right.
I thought they did a good job of going out and finding proven head coaches that had winning backgrounds, that had different philosophies than what we had just seen, which I thought was an important step in this process. You know what? It turns out we may have gotten one of the best up-and-coming coaches in the country. So
we said it last week. We may have got Brad Underwood before he's Brad Underwood.
Right.
A year before he's Brad Underwood. We don't know.
So,
I don't know. Everything he said, and you can't help but be impressed.
Yeah. I love the fact that he talked about being the hardest working team in the country. I love the fact that he talked about playing for the name in the front of your jersey rather than name in the back of the jersey. I love the fact that he talked about every student athlete that I bring here, I want them to work as hard in the classroom as they do on the court. I love the fact that he talked about
accountability.
The fact that he said, people ask me what my style is. My style is winning. I will do anything, whatever it takes to win. And, that's what I want to hear. You know, I looked at one of the press guys next to me and I said, if he comes out here and says they're going to run, I'm going to walk out of here. He started laughing. And it was true. I didn't want to hear anything fake. I didn't want to hear any freaking baloney from the dude. I just wanted him to say...
you want him to come across as genuine and,
right.
and believable. And
firm and as a leader.
Well.
Because as much as I love Dave, I don't know if he ever had that impact as the leader and the guys followed him.
I think it was tough with the types of players he recruited.
Right.
I think it probably got off track just trying to get too much individual talent here and making a mesh. Mm-hmm. And I don't think a lot of coaches are successful with that. They think a certain style, like for instance, a team of Ben Carter's would do fine under Rice.
Yeah.
You know, they're very coachable. They're studious about the game and they take things seriously. But then, I'll use the term knuckleheads just to encompass any player that's not 100% dedicated or a player that doesn't buy in, whether those issues are in the classroom or off the court or whatever. You know, the attitude.
Or not working hard enough to learn the playbook.
Or looking at the NBA too much. I think UNLV had far too many knuckleheads, and Rice couldn't get them on the same page as much as he tried. And I do think UNLV needs to move away from that. And, I mean, the model across the country has pretty clearly shown that you need, unless you're Kentucky, you need 3-4-year players.
Yep.
3- and 4-year players.
They're doing the best.
Mm-hmm.
There's some outliers there with the Duke team and the Kentucky team a few years ago. But when you look
at... You don't want to bank on being an outlier.
You can't. Right. When you look at the most successful teams over the last few years, like your Villanovas and Michigan States and Virginia's, they're all programs that are just loaded with upperclassmen that have built the foundation.
I don't just want upperclassmen. I want people that have come through the program.
Right. That have played.
I think that's the only way.
And sat for a year or two. Oklahoma, another case in point.
Yeah.
That have sat and learned from the players ahead of them.
That's culture right there.
Right. Exactly. And we never got that.
No. It was
too much. Lon had that. But
at Oklahoma, yeah. Here, right. No. A little bit.
He had some four-year guys that taught. I mean, Curtis Terry became a leader. Wink Adams was the leader.
Oscar. Anthony.
So the guys that were the four-year guys definitely bought into that leadership role. But
we still had a smattering of...
Which everybody's going to have.
Well, we had a high level of transfers in to UNLV that were just 1- and 2-year players. But... he found that consistency at Oklahoma for sure, and it obviously exploded this year. I mean, that's what upperclassmen will do for you. I mean, what was it? They started over that core, started over 100 games together. I don't care what five players you put together. If they're going to play 4 years together as starters, by the time they're seniors,
they're going to be able to play the game together.
They're going to be
good.
And
if they learn at all.
Yeah, and they will. Otherwise, they won't be starting.
Right. You know,
it's something UNLV needs to find, and unfortunately, I don't think it's something that UNLV is going to find anytime soon, even though it may be his ultimate plan. I mean, because with this many defections and this many open spots on the roster.
Even San Diego State, they rarely have transfers leave.
Correct. They'll take an occasional one here and there. They're
right.
They have a few on this year's team, didn't mm-hmm. they? Chole and
the guard a couple years ago was a transfer. But
Franklin, did he transfer? I can't even remember. But yeah, so UNLV needs to get to it. It's going to be too difficult for Beard to get like that, because unless there's seven, eight quality freshmen out there that could come in and play, where are you going to get these guys? How are you going to round out the roster with mm-hmm. 4 year guys? You can't. Not this upcoming year. You just can't. You got to get some JUCOs. You got to get some 5th year transfers. Maybe a couple freshmen that are under the radar that haven't signed with somebody yet.
Right. Right.
So it gets difficult in that first year. I did like that he said it was brought up by somebody in the audience that basically insinuated with such an empty roster and so many departures that it would take a while for UNLV to compete.
Mm-hmm.
And Beard didn't even bat an eye. And he said, says who?
Yeah.
That's not his expectation. He expects from day one that UNLV is going to be competitive with whatever he does in these next couple months to fill out the roster.
Yeah, and that's the mindset you want to see your coach have. You're right. We're gonna really have a tough time to compete next year. But not just wait till I get my guys in here.
You could get away with that at probably 300 schools, I would think. UNLV's not one of those schools that you're going to be able to have excuses built in for any year. That doesn't mean, you got to go out and make a Sweet 16 your first year as a coach. But expectations here are always unfairly, I feel, high,
mm-hmm.
higher than what they should be. And
higher than what we've produced.
Well, obviously much higher than what we've produced. Even the Sweet 16 wasn't good enough because we barely lost to Oregon, and we should have beat that team if it wasn't for
Tawan Porter going crazy.
My hopes going forward are that the fans give Beard room to grow the program, to have a little bit of patience.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think our fans will. But I think everybody deserves that chance, and I hope they are able to take a step back, realize where we're at, what needs to be done, and let the guy go to work.
Yeah, it's, especially after we just went through and we saw the swing for the fences and the quick fix to from middle of the pack Mountain West team to potential Final Four type talent, and you swung for the fences and it didn't pan out. Now I really want to see a focus on players and consistency and being able to coach them for 2 or 3 years, make them better players. That's what I want to see. I want to see a program here again. But bottom line, that's the only way we're ever going to become great again.
Well, I don't even think great is necessary at this point, but you need to be able to get to a certain level where you're competing in the Mountain West year in, year out for championships, and you're making the NCAA tournament, I'd say 4 out of every 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally when the stars align and you got a good group of upperclassmen, you can maybe make a run to the Sweet 16 type of thing. And, after that, a lot of things, you need a little bit of luck and all that. But I'm not, even as a longtime fan, I'm not holding out hope that we could return to the days of Tarkanian and dominate and have a dynasty for a 6, 7, 8 year period. That's not going to happen.
Right.
It's not realistic. I mean, we haven't even come close to that. And I do think a lot of fans hold on to that. And I don't want to let go of it, because if it's happened here, it's possible, but it certainly cannot be your
expectation.
Otherwise, you're just going to be one miserable SOB.
Right.
Right.
It's a deal where we have to embrace our past and cherish it, but not hold the standards to that level.
Yeah, it's different time, different game,
different money.
Town.
We don't have.
No, you and Albiz. You're facing. UNLV has proven that they're an absolute mid major when it comes to budget and things of that nature.
Right,
we're an absolute mid major.
Right. You know,
I don't like
how we can compete with teams like Ohio State and Kentucky and North Carolina. Did you see how much money their basketball programs? And that's not even talking about their football programs.
But then, I mean, you'll get the counter. Well, why can't we be like Gonzaga? Or why can't we be like...
And Gonzaga's built a program.
Yeah, they have. And you're right. And that's what it comes down to. I think that's what needs to happen is right now, UNLV is known for being a place where good players could come and unfortunately leave too early for the NBA, but it's a place to showcase your talents.
Right.
I think that foundation needs to be ripped up a little bit and a new foundation needs to be laid that it's a 4-year experience, 5-year experience, and we're going to build a program. And
you're going to get better here.
You're going to get better as a player. The teams are going to get better. There will be a lot more consistency, which is probably, unfortunately, what I'll remember most about Rice's tenure here is that it was just huge inconsistency. Because you know what? I mean, we had some absolutely tremendous wins.
Yeah, we did.
With Rice. And then we had some really, really bad losses. And that shouldn't be happening. I mean, those wins weren't fluke wins.
Right.
I mean,
even this year.
I mean, beating Indiana.
And Oregon soundly.
Oregon very soundly. That wasn't fluke. It's not like UNLV played the perfect game and we caught lightning in a bottle. No, UNLV was the better team on that particular
We shot the ball
nights,
better. We rebounded better. We defended better.
It did everything better. But then you turn around and you lose at home to Wyoming. And that high and that low, it just shows you that more than anything that there was a lack of probably just
pride.
Focus. I wouldn't even say pride.
Well,
you get up for
the good teams and you don't care about the bad teams, whether you win or lose. That's a pride thing. If you don't care if you win or lose.
I don't know that. No, I don't buy that. I don't think it was about not caring about winning or losing. If you're a competitor and you're at this level, you always want to win. I think it was more of a lack of focus and maybe even a lack of respect for the opponent. Not being able to get up for the lesser teams that you know you're supposed to beat. Just, you know, it's kind of like you think you're just going to show up for a day at the office, make short work of them, and move on to the next game. And that's happened too much. We need the consistency. You need to have a good feel on whether you're going to win or lose a game. You shouldn't be sitting on pins and needles against Air Force or Wyoming. Or you should know that, you know, we should drub this team by 10 points, 15 points, and you should be right more times than not.
I agree.
When you feel that. And we just didn't feel it. I mean, you didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, I certainly didn't expect to go in and beat Indiana. I didn't expect to beat North Carolina. I didn't even expect to compete that closely with, like, a Wichita State.
Or Arizona.
Or even in Arizona.
Year.
So
beating them last year.
And beating them last year, yeah. Those were not things I expected. So, I mean, there were... Good
there
parts were, of
that. There was extreme highs and extreme lows.
And it's hard to build a program with extreme highs and extreme lows. It's impossible.
But one more consistency that we had was as the season got close to the end and the NBA started beckoning, our teams really faded.
I don't know that it was that the NBA was beckoning because if... You look back at it, UNLV got off to such horrendous starts in conference these last 3 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were terrible starts to the point where you could kiss the league championship goodbye. So I think it was more of a snowball effect, I'd say, than it was my NBA's getting closer. I could see the finish line. NBA's here. I think it was more of things just kind of snowballing and not being able to find direction and not reacting well to desperation. More than anything, which comes down to a lack of senior leadership, a lack of...
Rashad Vaughn gets injured last year. Could he have come back? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But definitely had to save himself for NBA workouts.
Mm-hmm. I'll agree with that.
Kem Birch found out in the middle of the year that he had to go pro. Accurate, inaccurate.
I'm trying to recall.
remember whenever his agent lost?
Oh, yeah.
The number one draft pick.
I'm trying to remember.
He took the red out of his hair. It was all...
I'm trying to think who that player was.
Kim Birch.
Yeah, I know him. The player that was lost.
Oh, Andrew Wiggins.
Oh, Wiggins. Okay. Yeah.
Let's see. There's
well, let me ask you
Anthony
this.
Bennett started not playing nearly as hard at the end of the year.
Right, he never played hard defensively. Right. Offensively, he always put up his shots. That didn't change from the beginning to the end. I think it was more that, it was just frustration mounting that the wins weren't there and they weren't playing for much of anything except for 3 days in the Mountain West tournament.
I guess.
You know, it was just tough. I mean, myself, I appreciate because UNLV had never tried. Baino tried it a little bit to try to get the best talent he could, but UNLV was coming off such hard times.
Yeah, they were.
It was a little bit more difficult. But Rice really swung for the fences. I mean, he went up there and he white knuckled that bat and he swung for the fences with these players.
And he hit a lot of home runs.
And it just didn't pan out. No, I mean, ultimately the home run is, you know, making
winning
in the NCAA tournament.
Right.
And it just never came together that way. And unfortunately, I think it's directly proportional. I know I take some flack for this sometimes on the site when I talk about it. I just think, again, this is a generalization, T. I cannot say this for anybody. In fact, I'll say it doesn't apply to Steven Zimmerman at all. I think the more stars you have, the higher rated you are, the higher the entitlement is, the more your butt's been kissed throughout the process, the more YouTube tapes have been made and mixtapes have been made, and the more you've arrived and the less hard you work in general and the more your eyes are on the NBA. And I think it absolutely, the whole entitlement of players, I think it screamed very loudly this last couple weeks with players bolting for the NBA, or it just shows the delusions, how highly they think of themselves when it's clearly not there. And that's the culture of entitlement that we're living in. The only way
we had a walk-on that thought he wasn't playing the right position.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, it's everybody.
I think UNLV needs to definitely steer clear of that age of entitlement that afflicts so many of these higher-rated players. So I think, I mean, UNLV needs to go for not so many 5 stars.
Right.
Or even 4 stars. I mean, they even get... I mean, we've had 3 stars that are entitled, so don't get me wrong. It's not necessary. But I think it's pretty proportional. Steven, I didn't feel that way at all from the get-go. I mean, the way he entered the summer, he was just one of the guys. He never demanded touches, even when you watched him play. He probably should have been a little bit more selfish much of the time when he played. But that's his game. I don't think, even though we knew he was one and done, I never saw him, you know, try to do things he wasn't supposed to be doing because NBA scouts were in the stands or because the game was on national TV. So he's one of those that don't fit that mold. But I mean.
And I saw Derek Thornton was transferring today.
Oh, why?
And not getting enough pick and roll touches.
That's my issue. That's my issue. That's what I'm talking about.
One of his people, I guess his trainer or something, was going off on...
Oh, he went off heavy.
On how Duke lies and all that jazz. Well, guess what? The guys that stay 4 years at Duke generally become pretty outstanding players. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you cut through all the riffraff with that. You start... The problem is when you refill that riffraff with the same type of player. And that's what UNLV tended to do.
And one thing I thought was funny was he mentioned that he missed out on the opportunity to be on the Jordan Classic and the McDonald's All-American
team. By skipping
the
senior year.
He was the starting point guard for Duke.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
You didn't miss out on anything.
Yeah.
You go to those things to try and become the starting point guard at Duke.
You know, I don't, you know, some players just need to check themselves sometimes. They really do. They need to take a step back and look at it for what it is. And if you're in it for yourself, I mean, basketball is a team game. If you're in it for yourself, your team is going to struggle. You're going to struggle. You're not going to grow as a player, not as quickly as you should.
Right.
You can't be in it for yourself. Everything will come. Coaches, they're not trying to screw. There's not a coach that's trying to screw over a kid.
No, they want them all to be successful as possible.
Exactly. And if you let the team concept overwhelm you, and you stay within your boundaries and within the system, if the team wins, you're gonna get your accolades.
Right.
It's gonna happen.
Let me tell you something. If Steve Wojciechowski can become a household name by just playing hard defense as the point guard at Duke,
right?
You're going to be fine.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, so I'm hoping we see exactly what he's preaching. You know, the hard defense, the commitment to team, the commitment to day to day, not year to year. Winning every day, winning that battle.
I liked his deal of good month or good days turn into good weeks, turn into good months, which turn into good years.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think it's tough to stick to. I think you do need a specific type of player to do that, mm-hmm. and I think that's where you'll see UNLV's recruiting change.
But that's a good life thought as well.
Oh, absolutely. You could attribute that to anything in life. Absolutely. Right. I mean, he picked that up somewhere along the way. And absolutely, whether it's in the classroom, whether it's in your job, whether it doesn't matter what you do. If you can attack things day to day and make it the best, most productive day, yeah, you're going to succeed, period. I totally agree with that.
You're going to reach your goals.
I think it's very difficult to project on people. But he's got to find the players that fit into that, and that's what we're going to see, hopefully.
Because one bad day for a lot of players right now can mean I can't be here anymore.
That's the problem.
Right.
When the going get tough, the tough transfer.
Most
time.
You know.
They won't trust the process. It's about them. I don't like it, T. I don't like what the game has become.
Mm-mm.
It's absolute horse crap.
Mm-hmm.
The game itself, visually, it's disgusting.
Lost so much.
I mean, it was great to watch the championship game.
Yeah, two really good teams going at it
in a team style.
Right.
Yeah,
how many seniors on the floor? A lot.
Exactly.
Marcus Page, senior, hitting big shots. The guy who hit the shot at the end, senior.
Yep.
Bryce Johnson, the best player on the floor, senior.
Yep.
They all earned their dues and they all improved. And they made great plays.
Just got to stop rushing the process, guys. Just let it happen. Don't force it to happen. Let it happen. You can't force it. You can't. You can't force your way into the NBA. You can't kick the door down to the NBA.
No.
They open it for you.
Yeah. And when you're good enough, you know it because they need you. And they'll let you know.
Yeah, they'll let you know. You're not going to slide under any radar to get into the NBA.
Not anymore.
Uh-uh.
They're watching you from 10th grade, 9th grade on.
Yep.
They know who you are.
They know what you're doing off the court.
Mm-hmm.
They know who your friends are. They know your influences. They know whether you're a good teammate. They know whether you're coachable. They know all this. They pay big bucks to know.
Right.
So, I don't know. We're in for some stark changes, and it's necessary at this point. Like I said, my biggest concern moving forward is the patience of the fans, and even more so the patience of UNLV's wacko boosters that, you know, one day, you know how it goes with them, T. I mean, Jesus, it's flavor of the month with them. Not all of them, some of them.
It's a problem. Hopefully they've learned.
Well, what do you mean, hopefully they've learned? They've been doing this for...
Yeah, well, Dave had 5 years.
Well, what about before Dave? Did boosters not put pressure, along with fans?
On Lawn. Yeah.
On Lawn.
But it was everybody.
Yeah.
You know, the boosters hear the fans, and then they think that they make the changes. You know?
Well, I'm put it this way, I'm glad that
we were all in the same boat with Lon. A lot of people were.
Yeah,
I feel very sure of the fact that we all thought Lon's a great guy, good coach, but is he ever going to get us to that next level?
You know what? It made me start questioning all this with Rice and the recruits he brought in. and I've said it a million times on the site, I honestly believe Kruger had a ceiling. And you know what? He did. I still believe that. I don't think it was a Kruger enforced ceiling, though.
Mm-hmm.
UNLV may be the one with the ceiling. And if you have a ceiling, you're a mid-major.
Yep.
And you may bust through it every once in a while.
And just, you know, wave your hand.
Yeah. But so, you know, I mean, because Kruger's made Final Fours before UNLV, and he's obviously now made them afterwards. But you could see things are completely different with Kruger now. He's winning, and he looks good doing it.
Mm-hmm.
That Oklahoma
team. His style's phenomenal.
Was fun.
Free.
And they were easy to root for. I was rooting for Oklahoma to win it all because they're a fun team.
Yeah.
What, did Kruger learn how to coach in between UNLV and Oklahoma? Of course not.
Not a chance.
Did he learn how to...
Same assistants.
Did he learn how to recruit between UNLV and Oklahoma?
No.
Of course not. So where's the difference? You can't say it was fan patience necessarily. He had 7 years here.
Mm-hmm.
He's done more and less at Oklahoma.
Money and backing.
Money
and support. That's what it is.
I think it's athletic support.
Right.
I think it's departments.
Yeah. Because the two places he's won it, both football schools, lots of money, no expectations on basketball. Florida and Oklahoma.
Did he win at Illinois?
Not Final Four.
Not Final Four. Okay.
But he had a really strong team at Illinois. Oh,
he
got to go to Atlanta Hawks.
Right.
He was in the top 10 a couple times.
Right.
But so the two places he's won big, football, money, and support without a lot of pressure.
I don't think it was the pressure that did him in here. I think it's as, again, I've fully accepted begrudgingly that UNLV is a mid-major. And I think that's between a major and a mid-major.
They are right now.
Yeah, I think we have been for a long time.
Yeah.
Since probably 1992.
Yeah.
Actually, I mean, you can't be a mid-major if you're making Final Fours regularly. So UNLV was a major.
We were a major program.
Conference. And we were a major program. Not a major school, a major program, because we had no football success. It was a major basketball program in a mid-major conference.
Mm-hmm. In a different time. An error.
So, I mean, when I think about the Kruger thing, and it's been an argument on the site whether he would have done the same thing here. No, the same thing here as he did at Oklahoma. No, I don't think so. I think we saw the best of Kruger here when all the stars aligned, and we had the seniors, senior leadership, Joel, Kevin.
Young star and Wink.
I think
Gastone was a senior.
Gastone was a senior.
Young, very disciplined player in Darger. Corey was
a senior,
and junior. Wendell. Corey was a junior.
Was he a junior that year? Yeah, he was. And Wendell was a senior.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
because Wendell was
so
completely awful as junior.
So the parallel there is we made a Sweet 16 with a bunch of upperclassmen at Oklahoma, and UNLV was a very solid team that year. I never felt they were a Final Four team, but we were a top 20 team. Mm-hmm. I felt.
Yep.
Even though our first two games were, one was a little bit of an upset. Another one was a major upset over Wisconsin. But you look at Oklahoma with a bunch of upperclassmen. They were one of the best five teams in the country all year long. They made the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
UNLV with a bunch of upperclassmen, top 20 team, Sweet 16 team.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just, and that you can't blame a lack of fan support on why that team wasn't a Final Four. I think it is more school, department.
Mm-hmm.
UNLV small time. UNLV's mid-major.
I hate it.
It's a lot of things where under Rice, we definitely recruited like a major school.
Right.
Absolutely. I mean, we were going up against.
And we rarely lost.
Yeah, we won a lot of those battles. And we almost recruited out of our element, and we got bit in the ass for doing that. It just
because we didn't. Have,
I think we didn't
have the athletic department in place to be able to handle.
Well, I just think it's not even the athletic department. I think it's the whole culture, and would have Rice had more success? Had Kruger done it the same way and had success? Probably so, because that's just kind of a culture that's. you know, goes along a certain line.
Uh-huh.
But it was almost like all of a sudden here's this school that has no business getting all these players, probably for all the wrong reasons we were getting these players. And it just didn't click.
You know,
it just didn't.
It's almost like it wasn't deserved. You didn't work hard enough. Not that Dave didn't work hard enough for it, but it's too easy. It's too easy to just turn the program around and all of a sudden you're a top five team. Yeah, again.
Well, I think the easiest way to turn a program around in most people's mind is going to be an infusion of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you want. If you could flip the switch and get more talent. I mean, if you go
players back, win games.
If you go put it this way, if we went back 5 years and we were able to predict the future with just what players UNLV was going to land,
mm-hmm.
by stars, by number of stars or rankings. What would you be if we're back in 2010? Where would you think UNLV would be right now? Just as a fan, naturally thinking.
With all those players,
yeah,
one of the top 10 teams in the country,
exactly. And I think that was natural to assume back then,
mm-hmm.
that if we get a lot of good players, we're going to be really good. I think everybody had that assumption, but man, I'm telling you, after seeing this up close.
Couldn't be farther
coaching,
from the truth.
Talent, high-level talent, and the egos that come with them is much more difficult than coaching regular guys.
Right. Guys that come in and just want to work,
mm-hmm.
and get better.
Much, much, much different. Much different. All right, it's a lesson learned. What are you going to do? You file it under lesson learned. It doesn't work like that at UNLV, and it won't ever work like that at UNLV unless you gradually grow to the point where you become an actual program that contends and you're a top 25 regular, and then your recruiting could go up. And because what you said is, you know, you want these older players, these upperclassmen, to pass down what they've learned about the program and the pride in the program. You want to pass it down to, you know, the younger kids. Well, you could start recruiting these kids, even if they have a little bit of entitlement about them. They'll get put in a line by peers,
mm-hmm.
by leaders.
Right.
They'll get smacked around and, you know, and they'll conform. So recruiting can go up, but it kind of needs to go up naturally, not abruptly.
And let's take a look at the three best mid-majors in the country right now. I'd say Gonzaga,
mm-hmm.
Wichita State,
mm-hmm.
San Diego State.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'd agree with that.
None of the three, besides very rarely, will dabble in the 4 or 5 star range.
It's rare. Yeah,
Gonzaga
does it a little bit.
They took the kid from Gorman for next year, but he seems like a very coachable type of kid. Maybe not. I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
But the Sabonis.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam Morrison. I mean, you look at their best players. Wilcher went to Kentucky first. He didn't fit in there.
Mm-hmm.
So he went to a more... you look at the Wichita State roster that's been so good.
I wonder what's going to happen with that program. It's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah.
It really is because they lost...
A lot.
Some good guys. Yeah.
A lot. And then the San Diego State program, they really had never dipped into the 5-star, 4-star range until they got... This
Shepherd.
Last kid. Well, no. The
Shepherd was 4, right?
4, yeah. And but he was more of a hard-working type of guy. He wasn't really... And then the Malik Pope kid. And we saw the trouble that...
Malik had, yes. And
him,
you know,
on the team was a big deal.
And it was... What afflicted him at San Diego State was what was happening at UNLV with almost every player.
Right down the roster. We had 9 Malik Popes. They had 1. They sat him on the bench, and mm-hmm. they got better until he finally was able to come back in and play once he realized.
The kid is good.
He's really good. But when he was their star at the beginning of the year, they were awful.
Did he declare for the NBA?
I haven't seen that.
Me neither. Hopefully, for San Diego State's sake, he learned his lesson. He was put in his place.
And he'll be a great senior.
Oh, next year, I mean, if he has the right attitude, he'll be the best player in the league next year, I think.
Yeah.
I really do. San Diego State's going to be a pain next year.
Yeah, their two guards are really good, too.
With that backcourt, and then you got Pope, yeah.
So, you know, you look at those three programs, and they've all built from consistency and upperclassmen.
Mm-hmm.
If we're in the same boat as those three, that's the only approach we can take right now.
Yeah, and I think that's the other thing.
That's who you got to compare yourself right now to. You can't compare yourself to Kentucky and Kansas and Duke and North Carolina.
No, I agree. I think I like the thought of UNLV transcending conference and being a national team. I like that, but it was too big of a canyon to jump.
Mm-hmm.
It really was. I think you need to be the best in the league or one of the best in the league before you can actually be national. You need to build it. You can't just jump it.
I 100% agree.
And I think that's the whole trying to hit a home run thing.
Evel Knievel broke a lot of bones trying to jump that canyon. I think we did too. Now, let's go out and just build a little ramp in the driveway. Jump over that a couple times before we try anything
crazy.
Hope
you don't endo too much.
Exactly. No, we'll see. This feels like the right move, Joe. It really does. So
again, I'm telling you the worst thing I think fans could do is be impatient, not give him time to leave his imprint and to lay his foundation and grow upon that. Mm-hmm. You know, fans need to be patient and let it happen instead of forcing it happen like players tend to do, because that's kind of the way UNLV fans are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, almost like the players that jumped to the NBA too early. We want to fast forward and get to our rightful place at the top of the nation.
Right.
And sorry.
What?
That's not us anymore.
And the thing was, Coach Rice felt the same way as the fans.
Yeah, he did.
He wanted to take UNLV from zero or maybe 30 miles an hour to 150 miles an hour without having to go through the process.
Right.
As a coach, you have to go through the process too. You got to have patience. You got to build it.
Well, you know, but a 3-year contract to start is tough.
Absolutely.
And that's what was given to begin with. And then I guess when he was flirting with, South Florida, then it got extended a couple of years, and that part wasn't lived up to. So, you know, it was rocky even from the start in that respect. It was almost like, you're our coach, but we don't have confidence. Here's a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then here's a little bit more, and I promise you get this, and it doesn't come. It was just, I don't know. It was tough. It was tough. Again, I think in order to be, and this is where we're talking about like Oklahoma and the Power Five schools, they have a program, they have a department, they have a culture. I think UNLV nickels and dimes it a lot and makes it up on the fly.
Right.
And well, it's not.
To cover budgets, you got to start cutting other things.
Yeah.
And, you know, at Oklahoma, you just say, hey, we need this. Okay, it's done.
Right.
You know, there is no... That's the real difference.
Right.
There's no second guessing. Oh, coach, you need that? Okay, you got it.
Yeah, it's basically, coach, I'll give you everything you need. Go win.
Right.
Go win.
That's a much easier deal.
We're going to have patience with you. The fans are going to have patience with you. Just go win.
The fact that Coach Rice had to flirt with South Florida to try and get things.
Tutors and.
To try and get the things that he thought UNLV needed to be a better program.
Right.
Because they weren't going to approve it.
Right.
Says all you need to know.
Yeah.
Do you think Kruger's dealing with that at Oklahoma?
No, of course not.
No.
Especially, and now after a Final Four, he's.
No, now he's.
Now it's like, here's a blank check, just whatever your program needs. Get it built, get it done, get it approved.
We have interest in the basketball program now? Are you
exactly.
kidding me?
Look at attendance.
Okay, great. Football, you know, we just ended basketball. Football, the spring training was yesterday.
Yeah.
Life's pretty good over there. Life's pretty good at Ohio State. Life's pretty good at Florida.
It's just a different animal. But like you said, I think UNLV's got to aim for being Gonzaga, San Diego State,
Wichita, just hardworking teams.
And the thing is, if UNLV gets to that, they can bust above that.
Sure.
And that's the thing.
Sure.
Whereas, and I think Gonzaga could too. I don't think San Diego State can because you got.
Wichita State went undefeated.
I know, that 1 year.
3 years ago.
Was it 3 years ago?
Undefeated.
Yeah.
In a regular season.
Mm-hmm.
And the NCAA new. Hey, we got to give them the toughest path possible. We'll give them Kentucky in the second round.
Right.
You know, the one team that Wichita State had no chance of matching up with talent-wise is a team they got in the second round.
Well,
one day of coaching.
I'm not going to cry for Wichita State. They got a home game against us this year that they didn't deserve. And UNLV got the same treatment every time they were in the NCAA tournament. You don't.
Oh, I know.
You're undefeated, and you get Georgetown in the second round.
Sure.
With Alonzo Mourning and Dikembe Mutombo.
Got to make this tough.
Yeah, they may not have been the greatest Georgetown team in the world, but when you have two, were they
Hall of Famers?
Yeah, two Hall of Famers at center. You're trying to make UNLV's life miserable.
Right. Right. Right.
So I'm not going to shed a tear for Wichita State.
I wouldn't shed a tear, but they weren't UNLV either.
No, of course not. Well, they were undefeated, UNLV.
They were. And and it's funny. Every year, the national pundits come out and say either San Diego, Wichita, or Gonzaga, oh, it's their year to make the Final Four. I mean, so if we're in that breath, if we're in that conversation with those types of teams, and our program is in that direction where every year they're talking about, hey, this might be UNLV's year after last year's Sweet 16 run. They got everybody coming back.
Right.
You know, we haven't had that in a long time.
Not since 91.
Right. So
I didn't even have those hopes after our Sweet 16 because we lost so many seniors.
The last time I had those hopes was the Sean Marion year. Before the season started.
You mean just because of how good Sean was?
Well, and the group that we had coming back. We had Dickel, we had Kaz, we had Kevin Simmons.
Brian Keefe. Did we have Brian Keefe?
No, I think Keefe was gone.
He did graduate.
But we had Greedy. I mean, it was Keon. No, Keon was gone.
Keon was gone the year before.
But, I mean, it felt like after that whack run, that with the good solid nucleus coming back, no more Keon and that type of thing, and then you add in the number one player in the country in the JUCO ranks, that hey, we got a shot to really do something here because he replaced Nesby,
right?
You know, which Nesby took 30 shots to
get 14 points,
right? And I love Ty, but He definitely let it fly. Donovan Stewart was on that team, I believe. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a good team.
Corky
was on that team. We just couldn't. We got crushed by that non-conference schedule.
And SMU.
The one day I almost thought about stop being a fan was that game. That third loss to SMU. The Chad Ely shot, and then Gerald Sasser puts his shirt up and says, "This is my building," or whatever he said.
My house.
My house. I was like, you fucking asshole. I was sick. I was Penn State in college in my dorm, and I'm just like, oh, man. Unbelievable. I'll never forget that game.
Meanwhile, under your own nose at the time, you didn't even realize that there was a huge scandal going on,
right
at Penn State.
Hey, shut up. There's two.
You're ready to quit being a UNLV fan, but you tolerated
whatever
the molestation of boys at your dorm.
He was gone. He was gone at that time, Sandusky.
Okay.
The other game, I had quit smoking for like a month, and USC, UNLV with Marcus Banks. And they stole the ball from us like 9 times in a row.
Oh my goodness.
And dunked it.
Yes.
Started smoking again at halftime of that game. So
that was real bad. I
could have quit smoking for the rest of my life if it wasn't for that game.
So you're saying if we beat USC, you'd be a non-smoker?
If we would have even been competitive.
We weren't. And there was another game that season that was real ugly too, Missouri.
Yes. That came after.
Did it? It was just
the Missouri was the next year.
Missouri was the next year. I think Missouri was.
Oh, no, that was that year. We played awful against Missouri. And then following that, Missouri was also the game that Charlie stepped down after.
Yeah, that was.
But that wasn't the Marcus Banks game.
Okay.
Because I was not out here yet. And Missouri, yes, we played on ABC in like
it was
the end of February.
It was.
And it was just down by 30 at halftime or whatever it was. They just killed Keon Dooling. Had a nice center.
Yeah.
Kroenke's kid was on that team, I think. But it was the SC game. Because SC wasn't even any good. And they had the Twins. And
I don't even remember.
They just kept stealing the ball from us.
Yeah, they did have the Twins.
Were Stewart.
They? Stewart Twins, yeah. Yes.
And they just kept dunking, and I'm just like, what the
fuck? Oh, yeah. You're a big USC fan. Hey, Caton transferred.
Hey,
imagine that.
To Marquette.
Savant's transferring. Waiting for Kendall next.
No. Let's see if Coach Rice puts on Caton and Savant's Twitter feed. Hey, good luck at your next stop, too.
Nah, he wouldn't do something like that, but it's...
I mean, just absolute... And you know Kendall will probably transfer.
Or get kicked off, or kind of go somewhere where he can make the return.
Joe, some of this stuff,
I know.
It's amazing.
For those of you who haven't noticed, Google Kendall Smith and the Return, I think it's called, and it just shows you that whole entitlement thing we're talking about. A very marginal player who thinks entirely too much of their own game.
I mean, three-star. I mean, not that stars matter, but...
Marginal player.
You know, when you're a three-star, you think you'd be hungry. And...
Not one step trying away from the NBA.
Right. Trying to prove it every single day. Not thinking that everybody's waiting for your return. Like it's Michael Jordan coming back from playing baseball.
It was high quality production.
It was great production. The feed was fantastic. The shots of him in the gym, spot on. I mean, he didn't miss.
Yeah.
That Northridge gym or locker room was phenomenal.
Yeah.
But it's just too much.
Oh, it's way over the top.
It's like Spielberg's doing that.
Just Google it. You guys will get a laugh out of it. I promise you. Or you might not get a laugh. You'll be shaking your head though.
You may not want to watch college basketball.
Yeah, it's one of those things that just puts a real bad taste in your mouth about. Not necessarily Kendall. Just
no, because I thought Kendall was fine.
It's just the way a lot of kids are today.
Like, is that... What adult told him that that's the right step to take? You got to put this tape out. These Northridge fans can't
wait. Eagerly waiting your return.
I mean, come on. Unbelievable. So, yeah, that's how we're going to wrap this show up. I can't wait to get Coach Chris Beard in for 21 questions. That should be fun. And it's going to be a whole lot different than the Dave Rice questions because
a lot more the Dave Rice and unveil.
Yeah,
and...
yeah, the Dave Rice questions were all about history of UNLV in relation to now and kind of how he put those things into perspective and where he saw this team. And this guy's brand new. I do like the fact that he said, I didn't know anything about Las Vegas growing up, but I knew they were good at basketball.
Yeah.
You know? So he's the perfect age to have seen from afar how great the UNLV program was. Again, let's not put those expectations. Let's be patient, and let's try to enjoy the process.
And let's run. All right, until next time.
We're signing off. This is RebelNet Radio. Ooh.
There's talk on the street, it sounds so familiar.
How about those expectations?
Great expectations. Everybody's watching you.